Our gospel reading this morning comes from the Gospel of Mark. We're kind of backing up in the lectionary a little bit to continue our Do Not Fear sermon series that we somewhat began a few weeks back. This is from Mark 4, 35 through 41. So listen now for what the Spirit is saying to the church. On that day, when evening had come, Jesus said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat just so that the boat was already being swamped. But Jesus was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. And the disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Jesus woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And then the wind ceased and there was a dead calm. And Jesus said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And the disciples were filled with great awe, and they said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Truly, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. A great storm, a great calm, and a great awe, or a great fear. I don't remember fearing storms as a child. In fact, as the disciples may have been at the end of this story, depending on how we choose to translate that Greek word phobos, from which our English word phobia comes, I was usually in awe of storms. Phobos can either be awe or fear. Whenever a big storm would come through North Georgia, my dad and I would go out into our garage and lean up against the 1984 Honda Accord that my mother had inherited from her late father, and we would silently watch for the great lightning strikes to illuminate the darkened sky. We would listen as the thunder drowned out the soothing hum of Georgia's infamous scattered showers. We liked storms. We did not fear them. But then we were not sailors. If you've ever watched the TV show Deadliest Catch, or if you can guess the premise of the show from its title, you might be able to understand the great fear associated with a stormy sea. Jesus sees instantly, in spite of his own calm, that the disciples, many of whom were fishermen, they're filled with fear as the storm threatens to overtake their boat and drag the crew down with it. And he issues that question that reads more like a command. Why are you afraid? You don't need to be afraid. Do not be afraid. You probably remember a few weeks ago we said that do not fear is the single most frequent command in the entire Bible. Very likely because humans have such an inclination toward fear. And so for these next 4 weeks, we will look to the wisdom of the Scriptures as a guide around those moments, those things, those people of which we are most afraid. And no, we're not talking about spiders and snakes and public speaking. We're talking about chaos, instability. Next week, we'll talk about enemies, the real-life folks who actually intend to do us harm. We're going to talk about the fear of the unfamiliar, that which we do not understand and therefore do not trust. And then finally, we will face a fear that it seems like every time you turn on the news is staring us in the face. It is the fear of government, which is actually grouped together in Matthew's gospel with the fear of death. You'll have to come back in a few weeks to find out why. Though I imagine many of you have some ideas in mind already why government and death are linked together. How in these situations might we move from fear to not fear? From fear to trust? After all, the gospel of Jesus confronts those things that normally would give us great fear, but it confronts them instead with great trust in the sovereign goodness of God. Trusting in God, the church can accomplish all kinds of great things that we wouldn't even attempt if not for our faith. In fact, later on in Mark's gospel, there's a kind of second coming of this story that we read today. The disciples find themselves caught in another storm at sea, only for this second storm, Jesus is not in the boat with them. He has sent them out without their leader, with only the memory of the last storm and Jesus' assurance of their protection. Have the disciples learned to trust? No. But even though they have not, it certainly seems that they are being trained in trust. And we may be trained in trust as well. That is what this series hopes to accomplish, to train us in the movement from fear to trust, to take that most frequent biblical command seriously. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. When we arrive at today's story, before the training really starts to take place, Jesus has just finished teaching in parables. You probably remember from when we talked about gospel agriculture a few weeks ago. That was what happened right before today's story. Before that, he's been in conflict with the religious and authorities, and he's so bold, you may remember, in his addressing these cultural elites that Jesus' family comes to restrain him because they think he's gone out of his mind. The scribes said that he had Satan in him. And this whole time, Jesus and the disciples have been inside the promised land. They've been surrounded by their own people, even if it is a hostile and occupied people. But now, for some unstated reason, Jesus invites his little group to cross over to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. It's an area known as the Transjordan, which really just means across the Jordan. The other side of the sea is the land of Gentiles. For Jews, it's a little bit like the land of misfit toys. It is full of uncleanliness and bad theology. Why are they crossing over? Is Jesus maybe just fleeing from the chaos that has characterized his last few days? I certainly would want to do that. Or is there something more intentional in his choice to venture outside the confines of his own religious and ethnic in-group? Well, in either case, chaos ensues before the boat reaches the far shore. The disciples are a mess, but Jesus is sleeping soundly in the hull of the ship. That is, until the panicking disciples wake him. And having been stirred, the sleepy Savior stumbles out onto the stern and he screams at the sea, "Sit down and shut up!" The New Revised Standard Version translates it with an extra dash of piety, "Peace, be still." But if you've ever been awakened from sleep to deal with a silly problem, you know how it usually goes. The great storm stops. There's a great calm that comes over the whole scene. And then Jesus turns to his disciples. "Why are you afraid? Don't you have any faith?" And interestingly, it is at this point, after Jesus has questioned the disciples' faith in light of their fear, it's at this point that the disciples are given that word we mentioned, phobos. And it's a really interesting construction too. It says, "And they feared a great fear." A great storm, a great calm, a great fear. And again, the NRSV translation inserts piety where there's actually something more like panic. It insists that the disciples were filled with a great awe. And that may be the case as well, but there can be no doubt they were terrified. And they still didn't have faith, at least not the kind of faith that Jesus hopes for them. Which causes us to ask, what is this faith that is unafraid in the midst of storms, storms that threaten truly to destroy us? One author I read this week points out that the faith that the disciples need is not in Jesus' ability to control the weather. Jesus is entirely unconcerned about the weather, and really he seems fairly annoyed at having been woken up and expected to do something about it. Our belief in Jesus' ability to perform miracles is all fine and good, I imagine, but miracles are not the good news of Jesus. Let me say that again. Miracles are not the good news of Jesus. Throughout the gospel stories, people keep on looking for Jesus to perform miracles, and while he does that on occasion, Jesus is also known to bemoan those of us who insist on rooting our faith in these signs. He says, "Why does this generation always look for a sign? I tell you that no sign will be given." Matthew's Jesus is even more harsh. He says, "It is a wicked and adulterous generation that looks for a sign, but no sign will be given it." No, the life-giving faith that the disciples lacked is not in Jesus' mastery over all of the threatening forces. The faith that truly gives life and peace, the faith that Jesus wants his disciples to have, the faith that Jesus hopes for each and every one of us, is placed in his unwavering commitment to stay in the boat with us. Pastor David Henson says it this way: God's power isn't in the control of creation or of people, but in being in covenant relationship with them. It isn't in imposing the divine will or insisting on its own way, but in sojourning with us as we fumble around and make our way in the world. God's power is not in miraculous interventions. It's not in preemptive strikes in the cosmic war against suffering and evil, but it is in inviting us to build a kingdom out of love and peace and justice with God. God's power is not in the obliterating of what is bad in the world, but it is in empowering us to build something good in this world. God's power is not to protect us from all evil. It is to empower us to stand against it. As the storm stirred up for Jesus and the disciples as they were crossing over to the other side, we as the church may expect storms as we endeavor to reach out to those folks who are not our people, who are not currently represented in this particular congregation, but to whom the gospel is given nonetheless. And if we do encounter storms, we will do well to remember this story. For in it we learn that Jesus' intention isn't first to calm a storm. It is to stay with his disciples, come hell or high water, as they cross over the great divide of insiders from outsiders. Maybe this is why the disciples fear a great fear after the sea has been calmed. Because now, having been saved from the blowing wind and the crashing waves, these insiders are still headed out of their comfort zone and into the great unknown, unclean, undesirable land across the sea. When we choose, or rather maybe are chosen, to follow Jesus, the often unpopular crossing of lines simply comes with the territory. This is what Jesus does. He crosses lines that he's not supposed to cross. And it's bound to land us in turbulent waters from time to time. Whether it is the church getting involved in local politics on behalf of the poor, as is now happening in response to the recently proposed camping ordinance, or if it is naming and confronting the realities of racism across our country, which we are dealing with this week, or if it's making a concerted effort to develop a ministerial partnership with the Woodland Mosque, which is not really happening in any significant way, but I'm not sure that there's any reason it couldn't. As those things happen, there will inevitably be some folks who, in the hopes of keeping the right people separated from one another, insist on making waves. And when they do, church, let us remember that the faith asked of us is not in God's ability to banish all chaos and insecurity and threatening things from our lives. Our faith does not impress upon us the piety which avoids all conflict, but our faith is in the constant, abiding presence of Christ, who stays in the boat with us through the storm, who hears our cries for help, yes, but who will not turn back from that sacred journey across the great dividing sea. And neither should we. For the truly good news is that wherever our faith may take us, whatever storms we may encounter along the way, Christ's presence is already there, just as it is here, standing up to the wind and the wave that would keep us separate, that finally we may all be one. A great storm, a great calm, a great awe. Amen. Our next hymn is number 411, How Firm a Foundation.